All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, and as you can tell, today I am without my co-pilot, Sean McCool. He is on a, he's got a little business expedition that he's on today, and he wasn't able to join me. So I am going to be flying solo, but I do have a great guest joining me today. Steve Yastro. Is it Yastro?
Yastro.
That's a cool name. It kind of sounds almost like it's, I don't know, like a movie name or something like that, or something.
That'd be great. That's,
yeah. It's a great author name. Yastro.
Have you seen the name of the Marquise before?
So it's very persuasive. Okay. You know, you think about, we're going to be talking about persuasion. You think about things that are easy to remember. Yastro, I think that's pretty easy to remember. So
yeah, never forget it.
But Steve, thanks for joining me. Just to let our audience know a little bit about you, your background. Steve has authored three best-selling books, one called Brand Harmony, another called We, The Ideal Customer Relationship, and the one that we're going to be discussing today, which I really love. I've had a chance to kind of dig into it. It's called Ditch the Pitch, which that's another name that's very clever and easy to remember, but it is The Art of Improvised Persuasion. We're going to be talking about this topic today, Steve's book. Steve, thanks for coming on today and spending a little time and discussing the topic.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I don't know how much you know about our show, if you've had, because I'm sure you come on a lot of podcasts, but Sean and I always start out with we introduce our show as name says, Persuasion by the Pint. We've always got a pint of beer or a pint of something, a beverage. So I have to ask you, do you have a beverage on our show today?
I don't have an alcoholic beverage because I'm doing a workout after this. I'll have a wonderful cup of tea and I will vicariously have the beer later with you.
That's okay. We don't, we understand that some people, because everybody's coming on different time zones. We got people from California, so it's 1 o'clock their time. We can't expect them to be having a beverage at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
We'll have that beverage together later. I really make a workout in today.
That's right.
Once I have a beer or a glass of wine, the workout's not happening.
Well, are you typically an afternoon workout person? You're not an early morning workout.
I love to do lunch early afternoon, sometimes in the mornings. So okay. But today I didn't work out. Too many other things are going on.
Okay. Yeah. So what does a typical workout involve for Steve Yastro?
So I would say that yoga is probably my favorite sport, but I do a lot of boot camp classes. Since we've been here on the lockdown, I've really managed to transition to doing online workouts, and it's been good. I used to spend a lot of time in the clubs before this. I also, this might not seem like such the workout, but I love sailing.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It gets pretty physical out there in a little boat, let me tell you.
So are you, I guess you're close to the water. Where are you located?
I'm in Chicago.
Oh, okay. You're in a windy city, but you do have a lot of water around you. So
a lot of water around, but it's getting kind of cold this time of year.
Yeah. You don't want to do too much sailing in November or December, right?
No. I'm about to take the boat out of the water. So
good deal. Well, Steve, let's jump into the topic today. I want to tell people, not only are you a best-selling author, but you're the former senior marketing executive with Hyatt Hotels, and you're now president of your own consulting firm, Yastro & Company. Why don't you give us a little background before we dig into the book? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your career, and what led you to write, especially this book that we're about to talk about today, which is Ditch the Pitch.
Sure. So I ended up after business school going to the travel industry, working for a very entrepreneurial company, which led me to a great job with Hyatt Hotels and Resorts. I was the vice president of resort marketing, which meant I got to market some really cool resorts in Hawaii, the Caribbean, and some very sunny places in the United States.
Sure.
And it was really interesting because we had to do a turnaround in those resorts. They weren't doing really well, and we did it. And one of my biggest epiphanies in that job was I inherited this big advertising budget, tens of millions of dollars, yet the business wasn't doing that well. And I did some research on people who had, you know, never been to our resorts, but had brand awareness from all the expensive advertising.
Sure.
People who'd actually been to the resorts. And we asked people, where do you want to go on your next vacation? And barely any of these people said they were going to go to a Hyatt. And 70% of these people said they would go to a Hyatt. It was like, wait a minute.
Right.
We're spending all this money on marketing and it's barely working. And the experience is getting people to want to come back. And I remember saying, who's better at marketing, the ad agency and we marketing professionals, or the bellman and the front desk clerks and the guys at the pool and the architect who designed the hotel? And it really opened me up to realizing we get people to commit to our companies, not by promising them stuff, but by really delivering experiences that help them believe that we do something that's going to make them feel be better off.
Yeah.
So that led to my first book, Brand Harmony, how everything you do blends to tell a story to your customers. And from that, I started thinking, okay, of all the things you do that tell a story to your customers, what are the most important? And for most companies, it's not the websites and social media posts and advertising. Sure, they count, but in most companies, it's those human interactions, which really led me to my book, We, the Ideal Customer Relationship, and now the one we're going to talk about today, Ditch the Pitch, how when you have these encounters person to person with somebody from your company and a customer, that's where the magic really happens.
Yeah. But yeah, companies are still spending billions of dollars every year on, advertising, branding, the very thing that you're just talking about that doesn't work. Yet they're putting out, just churning out billions of dollars on wasted space.
A lot on wasted space. And I think this is true even in a digital age. Digital marketing gives us such amazing tools to persuade customers, et cetera. However, there's this tendency to want to delegate all your customer interactions to inanimate objects like social media posts and websites and advertising. Use them when you should, but when you can have that human encounter, if that suits the nature of your business model and your customers, do it, because it'll be so much more powerful than anything else, even in this digital age.
Sure. Yeah, I really, I was going through your book, and the one thing that I take away from it, and I have a history and my experiences, background in sales and marketing, at working in the for manufacturers for a number of years. As a person in sales, you know the deal. Salespeople always like to have their spiel, have their presentation ready to go, and it's form fit, or it's not, a lot of times not even custom fit to their target audience. It's a broad, it's just a broad presentation that they try to do, or their spiel or their elevator pitch or whatever you want to call it. I've seen this time and time again, and I think it really it's like it's old hat. People just kind of tune out when you start pitching to them. But what I like about your book is this is kind of a different approach, and it really focuses on, you have to really intentionally spend time focusing on the customer or the client, and not really just, looking, not just really talking to them, but also taking in the environment, observing, being alert to the environment that you're in.
Yeah. I mean, like you said at the beginning of that point, pitches don't work.
Yeah.
And why don't they work? Why do you need to do this? Mm-hmm. Because if you start pitching at somebody, the odds that what you have to say is what they really want to hear, it's like throwing a dart in a dark room, right? Yeah. People do this all the time. They write their PowerPoint deck on Wednesday and have the meeting on Thursday. Well, how did you know on Wednesday what that customer is going to want tomorrow? You don't.
Right.
So you might miss the mark. And also, if you're pitching, they're probably thinking about something else. Mm-hmm. The person you're talking to got 182 emails today. He's got a whole slew of text messages. He's, seeing all sorts of advertising on websites and billboards when he's driving down the highway.
Sure.
His life's so busy, or her life's so busy. You start pitching, they're thinking about something else.
Yeah.
So we don't want to pitch. So what we need to do is, when we ditch the pitch, is say, okay, how am I going to create the right conversation for this person at this moment? If you had to sum up the whole idea of ditch the pitch in one sentence, it's this: turn every presentation into a conversation that matters to your customer. Mm. Think about that. Everything flows from that. Don't ever make a sales presentation again. Right. Turn every presentation into a conversation that matters to that person. Then you've got their attention. They want to share their needs and interests with you, and they want to listen to you.
Right. And in saying that, you're not saying that don't be prepared, be prepared for what you want to talk about, but just don't do it. Wait for the opportunity in the conversation. What you're trying to say is, yeah, be prepared. Don't go in and just kind of wing it with a conversation. you know, be really prepared with what you want to say. But sometimes what you want to say is not necessarily what they want to talk about. It could go in a completely different direction, but you may have a solution for them.
Exactly. You know, you do prepare.
Yep.
You know, this concept is based on improvisation. And, you know, I live in Chicago, which is the world capital of stage improv. And my book, Ditch the Pitch, has lots of actors from places like Second City, you've heard about, interviewed. Plus, I'm a jazz musician. I play jazz like every day of my life. I love improvising music. Mm-hmm. What I know from studying stage improv and what I know from music is that you're not just winging it. You're prepared.
Sure.
But you're being prepared doesn't mean you've decided exactly what you're going to do. I call it creating a toolbox of possibilities.
Yeah.
If I know as much as possible about my customer from past conversations with them or researching them, if I know my product really well, I'm prepared for any possibility. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like if a handyman comes to your house, he doesn't get out, go, you know, turn off his truck in your driveway and say, you know what? I'm definitely using a screwdriver today. He grabs his toolbox and he goes to your house and sees which tools are needed. It's the same thing. You've got a toolbox of possibilities. So whatever comes up in this customer conversation, you can navigate to create the right conversation for this customer.
Right. You talk about one of the things you mentioned so important, turn down your analytic brain, practice the art of non-judgment. So what we're predisposed to doing when you and like you and I are having a conversation right now, the thing that is so easy, I mean, cause we're human beings, is to, when you're first meeting in contact with somebody is to completely start to you're judging, the customer during the conversation. It's so easy to get kind of caught off guard with really trying to just, you know, size them up, trying to think about what you're going to say next, what they're going to say, you know, what they're thinking. And it's so hard to turn that off. What you've got to do in essence is like push all that away because it's so distracting and focus on everything that they're saying. It's pretty difficult. How do you go about that?
Well, that's a great point because we teach six Ditch the Pitch habits. The first one is called input before output. Mm-hmm. The idea you mentioned of turning down your analytic brain is one of the practices we tell people to practice to develop the habit of thinking input before output.
Right.
Because the idea is if you start getting overly analytical, like judging that person or judging if you made a mistake or judging, am I going to make the sale? You get caught up in your own head.
Yeah.
You're sort of like up here and you're missing what's going on in the room. Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
Yeah.
Because if you're going to create the right conversation for this person that you're talking to and ditch the pitch so you can persuade them and find the right way to persuade them, you need as much information from them as you can get. At every moment, your customer is handing you gifts saying, here's what I care about. This is what matters to me. Right. This is what I'm thinking about. So if you're totally paying attention to your customer, you're not caught up in your own head, you're not thinking of something else. If you're on the phone with them, you're not looking at your email while you're on the phone, you're giving them your full attention. And let's face it, people do that all the time, right? If you are giving your customer your full attention, what you are doing is giving yourself the advantage of accepting all those gifts from your customer. Mm-hmm. The more customer information you have, the more likely you are to be able to persuade them because every customer is different. So you need that information from them to make that happen. So turning down your analytic brain is one of the things we teach to get people to be in that input before output mode.
Right. What about, how do you, I think it's so difficult because people are always in situations like that. And it's sometimes just out of, I think we're so predisposed to hate the, you know, that little lull of silence in between, you know, in between questions or conversation, especially with somebody that you don't know. And it's kind of that uncomfortable. So we're always trying to think of the next thing that we're going to say. A lot of times, even while the person and we're missing out on so many of those gifts, like you just said, we're missing out on a lot of resources that they're just throwing right at us that, you know, ways that we can help them. But, you know, it's so difficult because we're so predisposed to if we fear that uncomfortable silence. And so we're working on what is our next what's our next thing? What's our next move? How do you get away from that?
Well, it's a great point because there are times the customer isn't talking. Like I get this a lot. What if I get somebody who's being defensive and they're making me talk or whatever? believe this, virtually every human being loves to talk. Virtually every human being loves to hear themselves speak.
Right.
So if they're not talking, you just haven't found a way to, like, you know, break the seal yet and get them to start flowing with information out. So what you're trying to do is identify ways to ask them a question that does break the seal so they start talking. And a lot of salespeople get uncomfortable in that lull for silence, and they think they need to fill it. Mm-hmm. Resist that. You know, and where this fits into this whole idea of thinking input before output. If you're trying to persuade somebody, think of the information. Let's imagine this is a sales setting. You're trying to persuade a customer to do business with you. Or maybe you're in a company where you persuade a department head to collaborate with you on a project, whatever it is. The more information you have from that person, the better off you are. Mm-hmm. Here's an example I used recently. I was training a bunch of real estate agents who sell real high-end homes. Like, this is you have to be selling more than X number of million-dollar homes to ever get in this group.
Sure.
And so I was doing some training session with them. I said, imagine the scenario where a couple decides they want to sell their house, and they invite real estate agents to come talk to them about who's going to be what they call the listing agent to list the home. Mm-hmm. And I said to these people, imagine if this prospective client of yours talks to two other people first, two other competitive real estate agents, and they talk to you. Those other two people come into the people's kitchen table for that 7 o'clock in the evening meeting, and they present their credentials and say, here's all the homes I've sold. Here's my marketing programs. Next night, the same guy does the same thing. You come in the third night, and yeah, you spend a little bit of time talking about your credentials. You spend more time talking about them, learning about them, mm-hmm. letting them talk, hearing why they want to sell the home, what's important to them, what are their concerns and fears. Who's got a better chance of making the sale?
Yeah.
You've learned so much more about that client. You're going to be able to construct a conversation that they go, wow, he really understands us, or she really understands us. Customer information is your best competitive advantage. So accept those gifts from your customers.
Yeah.
And construct the conversation based on what you learn.
How much of the persuasion or this method looks at the nonverbal? I mean, are you... You know, there's so many nonverbal cues that are always surrounding us in the middle of a conversation, whether it's what's on the wall of the person's, you know, in the person's office, or what's on their desk, or, you know, what they're wearing. You can size up a lot and just, you know, in a flash by just being intentional, you know, noticing things. And those are things that we can often use to our advantage. You know, oftentimes you can learn a lot about a person. Are they a golfer? Are they, you know, do they enjoy baseball? And, you know, those are things to be on the alert for. I know whenever I've gone into offices in the past, you know, the first thing I do is look in the hall, even before I get into a person's office, is always like identify what's on the wall. What are some of the achievements that this company has, you know, been awarded, or what are some things, you know, a lot of times you'll see articles that are framed or things like that, where they've made, they've been awarded something in a trade journal or something like that. So, you know, things like that you can easily bring up into a conversation that helps build rapport. What totally. Are some other things that you should be on the lookout for when you're doing that?
It's a really interesting point. What I always like to think about when I'm talking to a customer for the first time, or maybe even somebody I talked to a week ago, mm-hmm. I imagine I'm walking into a movie 15 minutes after the movie started, meaning that the story's already going on.
Yeah.
Nobody's like a blank slate waiting for you to show up. And so one thing I'm trying to figure out is, okay, what's going on in this person's day, mm-hmm. year, in their career, in their life, right? And so with that in mind, you're trying to understand what I call it sizing up the scene. A couple parts of that are, who is this person? We teach a principle we call who before what.
Right.
You know, we have this tendency in marketing and sales to put people in categories. Oh, that is a director of IT or this. And like, I know how to sell to those people, but every human being is unique. So who is this person? Like you mentioned, look around their office. Or if you're on Zoom or Microsoft Teams, what do you see behind them? What kind of clothes are they wearing? What do you see in their body language? So you can understand, who is this human being?
Sure.
Because we're not selling to job roles. We're selling to human beings. Mm-hmm. Also, the other part of sizing up the scene is, what's influencing them, right? Let's say you're trying to sell to somebody and their boss sticks their head in the door for a minute while you're talking, and you also understand something about their relationship with their boss. Either the person you're selling to is hyper-confident or gets a little scared around their boss. You just learned something so important.
Absolutely. About
how the boss might influence the decision of the sale you're trying to make. So there are all these cues, and you want to be on alert for them. And I love your point that it isn't just verbal, which means when you're on the phone, it's extra hard.
Right.
You know, but when you got the visual, you can supplement that.
You talk about creating a series of yeses, and I love this because I always talk when Sean and I talk on the show, you know, one of the things in persuasion is getting a person to commit on a micro level. And one of the easiest ways to get them to commit to a big decision is to get them to commit to the little small ones. And one of those is actually getting them to say yes, you know, getting them to agree with you. You know, you don't move forward if there's a no involved. So the whole point, how do you get a, you know, how do you get the client or your customer involved in saying yeses or those little, what I call those micro commitments?
Micro commitments, a great way to look at it. The principle I think about is conversational momentum, mm-hmm. right? If you get into a conversation where the customers or prospective customer or current customer, whatever it is just flowing with you.
Yep.
And there's still, because the conversation's flowing, it's like the rest of their life is shut out. They're just focused on you.
Right.
It's like when you're driving down the road at night and you see green lights, right? And there's a red light down there. By the time you get there, it turns, you keep going, right? We want that kind of conversational
momentum. Got that momentum.
Right. And, you know, if all of a sudden you say no to your customer, they say no to you, it's like red light. And also mm-hmm. they're broken from this engagement with you.
Yeah.
So think about these. I love your point about micro commitments, because a sale is really a series of yeses. All mm-hmm. conversations are a series of yeses, all good conversations. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have to be exactly the word yes. It's constant moments of affirmation and agreement to keep the conversational momentum going. So it's like, you know, and even if, you know, if a customer says something, say, well, oh, so what that means is this. You're saying, I heard you. I listened to you. That's an affirmation. Mm-hmm. Or asking them an open-ended question. Because if you say, so, you know, do you want to do this? They might say no. How about you say, you know, what is it you want to do? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to do this or this? Giving them a choice of yeses. The open-ended question avoids them saying no. Right. You don't want either of you saying no.
Right.
And so if you can continue to get those moments of affirmation agreement, I think one other part of that is that I believe this. In a customer conversation, there's always something to say yes to. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean you're never going to lie. Of course, you're never going to be inauthentic. I mean, in a totally genuine way, there's always a way to say yes. Like, let's say somebody says to you, well, you know, I'll give you the order, but can you deliver it in 2 weeks when the delivery time is 6 weeks? Well, you don't have to say, no, I can't deliver it in 2 weeks. You say, well, tell me why the 2 week deadline is really important. Mm, yeah. I found you need part of it and you could ship that part of it in time. Mm-hmm. Or you might find out that it's so important, they're willing to pay a rush charge.
Sure.
In other words, I always believe there's something you can say yes to keep that conversational yeah. momentum going.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, that's the worst thing you can do is say it just no, and that's it. It's always, there's always a third solution. It's never yes, yes, no. Or like you said, why is that important? That's a great question, because you're actually getting to the root of why, you know, the importance of why in any conversation, why they need something or why it's so important to them.
And that's a great point, because linguists will tell us this. Mm-hmm. Human communication has so much signifying and symbolism, isn't it, that people usually don't tell you everything they're thinking for a couple of reasons. One is we normally just imply a lot in our communication. Plus, they might not have articulated what they want. And when you peel back and probe, one of our habits in Ditch the Pitch is called explore and heighten. Like if your customer tells you something that's really important to them, great. Ask about it. Dig in. Mm-hmm. Probe. Then you learn more about them. They're being listened to, which people love. And they might have a realization that, oh, I hadn't thought about that. That makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
You know, not only are you learning about what they want, but they're learning about what they want. So they are more likely to see you as a collaborator and helping them learn what they want.
Right.
You know, it's interesting how people love to be listened to. And so as part of this creating these yeses is that you're acknowledging, I heard you. Mm-hmm. There was an interesting psychology study that was done in the Netherlands, which I talk about in Ditch the Pitch. And this is like an official like journal of experimental psychology. So it's an official test. They had servers in restaurants. They took their tables and divided them in half and said, okay, for half your tables, just take the order and write it down. The other half of your tables, take the order and repeat back. Okay, you wanted to have the steak medium rare with the broccoli and you're having the salmon. They said it in Dutch, of course, okay? but what they saw was the tables, they just repeated the people's orders back to them. Their tips were 68% higher. Why? Because it was like, I heard you. Let me affirm what I heard from you. Now imagine if we took that into our sales conversations and just let customers know, I heard you. I'm listening to you.
Yeah.
Wow, what you said is important. They're going to be that much more engaged with you and more likely to say yes.
Absolutely. And a lot of that sometimes is like mirroring. You're mirroring your the person that you're in front of. And I love that repeating back to them, because it makes them feel like you're actually listening to them, instead of just the worst thing you can do is, you know, I see a lot of people when they're in situations like that and they're just saying, you know, as if they're trying to, you know, let that person know that they're listening, when it's so easy to say, And so they're not really listening. It's pretty evident a lot of times. But when you repeat something back, it's very evident. I mean, you actually have to be listening to, in order to repeat that back to them. So.
Yeah, we call that a callback. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the practices under habit number 6 in Ditch the Pitch. And it's like, you can call back right away. Oh, I just heard you say this. And how about your follow-up email repeats that? And you talk to them next week. Wow. They're really listening to me. Really good. Because the thing we need to remember, which is critical, one of the most critical issues here with ditching the pitch, is that to realize that, you know, I mean, who does your customer care about more? You or themselves?
Sure. Yeah.
Tough question, right? They care about themselves more than they care about us. Let's face it. So what do you think they want to hear about, themselves or us? Mm-hmm. And so much of sales is, let me tell you my story and then I'll get your feedback. Flip that around. Let's hear their story.
Yeah.
And then figure out how to blend our story into theirs. Because, right. You know, every human being on the planet is walking around with a personal life narrative going on. We're all living our life story all day long.
Yeah.
Why make that customer jump out of the story that they're living all day long, they're familiar with, and the story they love, their own story, and jump out and look at your PowerPoint deck and hear your story?
Sure. Forget. Yep.
Have the conversation be about them, and then weave little pieces of your story into theirs. And all of a sudden they start seeing you connected to their story.
Mm, that's so true. I always find that those type of situations, it's always so much easier in a tense situation, whether it's a negotiation setting or you're talking, you know, if it's a price negotiation or something like that. If you're always, like you said, keeping the focus on them, I always call it like keeping the camera pointed at them. That's right. And like just, you know, following up with them and just making sure that nothing's about me, but learning everything I can. And like you said, making the story, everything focused on them. I think you take that. You take your uncomfortable or your uneasiness or that anxiety away, because it's always direct. Everything's always directed at them. If you can learn to do that, I think you take yourself out of some uneasy situations there sometimes as well.
Well, yeah. And let's talk about why that works. It's a really great point. Because your customer cares more about themselves than you, let's face it. Okay. Be sad for a moment, but then realize this is life. They care about themselves more than they care about you. Let's live with it.
Right.
Is that, you know, habit number 5 in Ditch the Pitch, we call it focus the conversation on your customer. Resist the temptation to talk about yourself, talk about them. And the practice we have, though this seems counterintuitive, but it works. We say, make 95% of the subject matter of the conversation about them. So in other words, I don't mean they talk 95% of the time. I want them to talk more than half the time. But even when you're talking about them.
Right.
If the conversation is centered on them, okay, some salespeople say to me, but how am I going to tell them I have all these products and all these features and service offerings? How can I cram that in with only 5%? Plenty of time. You know why? Because if you're talking to the customer and you're focusing the conversation on them, and a really important issue comes up to them, and you're able to say, oh, this is how we deal with that, and you connect your one thread of your story and you weave it into the conversation, they're going to remember it. You know, let's say you're selling technology, mm-hmm. and the customer has some particular problem about, you know, technology helps run a factory, let's make it up, okay? Yep. And there's this one issue about, if a problem happens, they have downtime in the factory and it can hurt them. Just making this example up, so you know, we'll pretend it's relevant.
Sure.
You've got a particular way you solve that problem, okay? Now imagine if that particular way you solve that problem was on slide 9, bullet point 14 of a sales deck. Think the person's ever gonna remember it?
No.
But if you take that one bullet point and bring it into the conversation at the moment that customer just shared with you one of their concerns, they're remembering it.
Absolutely.
So if you have a conversation about them and bring little bits of your story at the right time, you'll have them understanding how you can help them.
No doubt. I had a little example of this last night. It wasn't a business situation, but I was actually taking a flight from Dallas home last night. It's about a good 2-hour flight. So I get on the flight, I sit right next to a guy, and you know, every now and then you'll find I'm not, you know, it's the end of the day. The last thing I want to do, you know, you're in business meetings throughout the day. The last thing you want to do is, you know, at 6:30 in the evening on a flight, you kind of just kind of want to kick back and relax a little during the flight. This guy wanted to talk the whole time. But one of the things I did, and I found it interesting, I said, what the heck, you know? So I just started asking him questions the whole time. This guy probably talked 80% of the time, spent the whole time talking about everything from baseball, his experience playing baseball and all sorts of things. By the end of the flight, you know, and it actually was a good conversation, but I realized at the end of the flight, he was just like, man, it was so great talking with you. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, he gave me his name and he's like, you know, it's a relatable business. So he's like, if you want to reach out sometime, you know, but just that emotional connection right there of just, I talked very little. It was like a 90-10 ratio, but he felt like that was an incredible discussion. And I'm like, you know, I'm thinking to myself, all I did was ask you a few questions along the way and get you spurred about talking about yourself. But he felt like that was an incredible conversation.
You know, so why that happens. I have these two friends. Their names are Peter and Susan Glazer. They are professors in communications, PhDs, professors of communications at the University of Oregon in Eugene.
Yep.
And they wrote this book. I love the title of this book. It's called Be Quiet, Be Heard. How's that?
I like that. You know? I love it.
Be Quiet, Be Heard. And so what Peter and Susan did to write this book, they did an experiment in their lab at University of Oregon where they get two people in a room and have them do a conversation. And they measure, okay, he talked 55%, she talked 45%. Next conversation, she talked 80, he talked 20, whatever it is. And then they asked the people to rate how much they enjoyed the conversation. Without fail, the person who talked more than 50% enjoyed the conversation more. So, is there a lesson in that for us as salespeople?
Yeah, absolutely. You,
and I do a little assessment with salespeople when I train them. I have them in a Ditch the Pitch workshop. We have them rate in customer conversations. My customer always says 50% of the talk, more than 50% or more of the talking, usually, sometimes never. And most salespeople are going, yeah, I guess my salespeople, my customers don't, I do most of the talking. So we have people practice, we call it the practice, say less to notice more.
Yep.
And so the idea is I actually train salespeople. Okay, I want you to make sure in every conversation this week, your customer's doing most of the talking. And two things happen. They get those gifts from their customer. They learn more because they're talking more. And customers are more engaged because people love to hear themselves talk. So I think your story is a great example of what happens.
Yeah, you've got in your book, you talk about, it's called Obey the One Paragraph Rule.
Yeah.
So what you say is don't talk more than one paragraph's worth of information at a time. And notice what they say after, because they will give you a lot more to follow up with, I'm sure.
The one paragraph rule is a wonderful, wonderful tool. My brother, who is an electrical engineer, invented this idea because he was making these highly customized, designing these highly customized computer chips for Hewlett Packard, then a spinoff there. And he went from engineering into sales and he's trying to sell these really complicated products to other people who happen to be also were highly educated, sophisticated electrical engineers. But even with a highly sophisticated customer, it was really easy to overwhelm them with too much information. So he realized, oh, how about if I just talk about a paragraph at a time and shut up and listen? The other person might have time to absorb the information, or they might ask a question that says, I didn't understand you, or ask a question that says, oh, that means this, which means they did understand you.
Yeah.
So we can all apply that. The one paragraph rule. Maybe your customer gives you a buying signal. Maybe they tell you you're way off base and you can navigate. Now, we all know people in our lives who don't practice the one paragraph rule. We know how much it irritates us, right? We don't like people who babble. We don't want to be that person.
No.
One paragraph rule is a really good life skill and it can help you in persuading a ton.
We talk about like stories, how persuasive, you know, stories are very persuasive if done the right way. And you talk about in your book, how to weave stories into those persuasive conversations. How do you go about integrating a good story into a conversation, and how do you weave that in to where it's relevant to what you're trying to do?
It's a really great question. What I always want to remember is that, as I mentioned earlier, one of the paramount principles of Ditch the Pitch is turn every presentation into a conversation. Mm-hmm. Even if a customer asks you to tell them about something, so tell me, how did you guys develop this product? Okay, you just got asked by your customer to tell a story about how you developed this product. But remember, you got to turn presentations into conversations and practice the one paragraph rule. So how are you going to make sure that as you communicate the story of how you develop this product, you do it in a conversational way? One paragraph rule, stop, let them talk, ask them questions. Also, remember what I said earlier, they care about themselves more than you. So make sure you are crafting this version of this story in a way that's going to be relevant to what you know about what they care about. And so anytime you can relate the story to their story, it's better. Let me, you know, example. I used an example a few minutes ago about, like, I was training these real estate agents. Yeah. Imagine you're trying to sell a home. I know we don't have many real estate agents here. Let's all imagine we were. and somebody comes in the house to look at it. Yep. It's really tempting to tell the story of the house. And here's this, and here's the fireplace, and here's this. How about if instead you have a conversation about them? So what are you looking for in a home? You know, how do you want to live here, and make it about their story? Right. And then the story of the house becomes part of their story. And you're saying, oh, well, that's the kind of entertaining you want to do. Let's look at this room here. Wouldn't it be fun to, you know, so you make it about them. So the trick is to personalize the story for them and always make it a conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the worst thing you can do is try to trump somebody else's story, right? It's like, you know, your customer gives you a story. And then you feel like you gotta, like, go even above their story and say, oh, well, you should hear this story. You know, that's the worst thing you can do, because it's almost like you're undermining them.
Well, that's like, you know, as people get older, it's like, oh, I just did my knee surgery. Oh, you should hear about my knee surgery, right?
Yeah, right.
It's a tendency to try to top people with your story. We don't want to do that. You know, the thing I always remember is, like I said earlier, everybody's got their life story going on. It's what they value.
Yep.
When you can honor somebody's life story and be part of their story, it's what they care about. It's like, so much of marketing and sales is we try to differentiate by saying, here's why my company's different, here's my products are different. The reality of life is that our customers don't always give us credit for our products and services being different, but they think they're different. So your customers are actually saying to you, hey, if you want me to think you're different, show me, you know, what makes me different. So anytime you can make it about their story and honor what makes them unique, that's when they're going to think that you're different.
Yep.
And making the pitch enables you to do that.
And you got to remember, the whole purpose in all this is not to just bombard them or load them up with information. Your purpose in this conversation is to expand on the relationship, right? So, you know, you got to, your next step, you know, you've got to be thinking not short term. You've got to be thinking a long term relationship. Hopefully that's what you're thinking, to say, I'm not here to sell you something. I'm here to develop a relationship with you so that we can see if there is a good fit. Sometimes there's not a good fit. And you find that out by developing or finding out more about them and seeing if that relationship's going to work. So
there's a lot in what you just said. It's really a good point. You know, it's like, I'm convinced that relationships are more differentiating than products and services, mm-hmm. because people believe they can get the products and services a lot of places. Even if your product's better, you don't always get credit for it. But if they've got a connected, what I call a we relationship with you, they feel in partnership, they're much more likely to think you're different.
Absolutely.
So what you got to do is realize that my goal in each conversation isn't necessarily to make the sale. If you can make the sale, great. But your real goal in every conversation is to leave the conversation with the relationship a little bit better so that you earn the right to eventually get the sale.
Sure.
So one of the things we teach in Ditch the Pitch to this angle is, we call it, it's one of the practices under habit 6, which is called leave things in your pocket. Because salespeople think, I got to tell them everything. I do so many great things. Well, no, your job isn't to impress your customer with all the things you can tell them, because if you try to tell them everything, they won't remember it all. Your job is to tell them enough that you advance the relationship to get towards a yes.
Yeah.
Like, I was training all these fundraisers for one of the most successful social service organizations here in the state of Illinois. And they raise a lot of money and they do amazing things for people. amazing social services. And their fundraisers would say, but my problem is I have so much to tell people. I said, well, then don't, I don't have time to tell people everything. I said, well, then don't tell them everything, you know, right. Find out the part of our amazing list of stuff that is right for them and tell them those few things. And then they'll be more interested in hearing more in the next meeting.
Absolutely.
You leave things in your pocket. Don't say it all. Build a relationship.
And it gives you the opportunity. If you leave those in your pocket, that just gives you the opportunity to follow up with them. And, you know, after you've initially, you know, had that meeting, you can follow up with them and say, you know, by the way, you know, we were talking the other day and I just wanted to share something with you. You could send them, you know, I love this example that you've got with your book. You give a little summary of Ditch the Pitch that I've got in front of me. It's really nice. I don't know who did your graphics, but it's amazing. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, what's that?
Well, this is a little pocket guide I sent you.
Yeah, exactly. The pocket guide. So if you could create, you know, and doesn't take a lot to create like little graphic presentations like this, mini presentations that you could, after the initial meeting with someone and developing that relationship, you know, say, you know, follow up, send one of these little mini pocket guides like you have here with a little note on it and just said, enjoyed meeting with you, enjoyed the conversation, forgot to mention this, you might find it interesting, and, you know, personalize it and send it to them as a follow-up after that. You know, just kind of, it's a way to kind of continue that relationship and follow up and that contact, you know, contact marketing. So,
right. It was what we said earlier about the callbacks. Yep. You could have a chance to do a follow-up and refer back to things. And yeah, you could add something new in, like you mentioned.
Sure.
And it adds continuity to the relationship.
Yeah.
Definitely does that. Yeah, no doubt that's a really good way to keep building the story in their mind. So what we're trying to do is help the customer form a story in their mind that they'll be better off working with you. Yep. That's it.
Absolutely.
People will commit to you when their personal story says, oh, I'm better off if I do this with you, right?
Yep.
And that isn't because of your products and your features. Those might be support. It's because they believe in their story in their mind, they're better off working with you.
Sure.
And when you're engaging with them, you're trying to help them create that story.
Steve, this has been great. I've enjoyed it. I wish we had more time, but I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing about your book. What's the best place listeners can learn more about you and get a copy of the book and learn more about your business?
At my website, yastrow.com, just yastrow.com. They can see the books. They can learn more about me. And of course, the books are available in all the usual places also.
Sure. Steve, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Love to have you back on when my co-pilot's back on the show again to maybe talk about another topic. I know you've got, like you said, you've got some other topics or books related to branding. Love to have you revisit down the road.
Great. And I'll do my workout first. I can join you for the bedroom.
By the way, yeah. And that's another thing. Hope you have a great workout. Don't want to keep you too much longer.
Great. Excellent. Fabulous talking to you, Jonathan. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.